Hello, American Prestige listeners. It's Derek. I am joined in the wake of the recent turmoil between Israel and Iran by our Iran expert, welcoming back to the program, Sina Tusi. He is a non-resident senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. He's written a piece for Foreign Policy about what we're going to be talking about today. It's called Iran Has Defined Its Red Line with Israel. He also is the purveyor of the Beyond Borders Substack. If you want to check that out, we'll have links to these things in the show description. Sina, thanks so much for coming back to the show.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So I'm hoping that this will be, this can kind of cap off what we've, Danny and I have been talking about in terms of the escalation over the past few weeks between Israel and Iran, hoping that there will not be any further escalation in the near future. I don't know how naive that hope may be, but let's talk about what's happened so far this month. And I want to start with the April 1st attack on the consular building, I guess, that's been disputed to some extent, but the building in Damascus, the attack that killed seven Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps officers, along with a number of other people. What did you make of that attack, and what have you seen in Iranian media and discussions in Tehran among Iranian officials about that incident?
Well, it was a massive provocation. This was part of the Iranian embassy compound. It was actually the building right next to the embassy. It was between the Iranian embassy and the Canadian embassy. And both of those embassy buildings were actually damaged, but this building, which was the consulate, was entirely destroyed. And I don't think it could be overstated that under international law, you know, embassies are considered the territory, or you know, that the kind of sovereignty of the host nations, and that, you know, to now bomb embassies, you know, embassies, and you know, embassies, every country's embassy too. Like if you talk about American embassies abroad, they engage in a host of activities that are not just consular. You know, the ambassadors there, various, you know, security officials, military officials operate there. And even when countries don't have good relations, these things still continue. For example, now between Russia and America, you know, if the normal diplomatic ties are still maintained, that the embassies are still there and they're operating, and with the whole host of things that come with it, diplomatic, military, intelligence. And this is a norm in international law. And for Israel to bomb this compound was a massive escalation in its kind of shadow war with Iran, and really introduces, you know, more of this law of the jungle, that, you know, embassies are fair game now, you know, along with all the other actions that we're seeing the Israeli government commit with impunity, kind of really trampling on international law. Now, you know, the context for this Israeli strike, you know, beyond just the immediate Gaza war, this kind of, you know, massive uptick in regional tensions with Iran, is that over the past about 10 to 15 years, as this kind of covert war with Iran and Israel has really, really heated up, that Israel has been kind of relentlessly targeting Iranian interests and personnel and infrastructure, both within Iran and outside of Iran. You know, we've seen assassinations of scientists. We've seen, you know, many kind of various places in Syria bombed that the Israelis, you know, have claimed is linked to Iran. And we've seen attacks within Iran, you know, targeting nuclear and military facilities, as well as infrastructure and as well as civilian infrastructure, including through cyber attacks at Iran's railroads, Iran's gas stations, your kind of steel factory, things like this. And so Iran, in the face of all of this, has been relatively restrained. They have had this policy that kind of in the kind of foreign policy analysis community in Washington, it's generally dubbed as strategic patience, that they've been kind of absorbing a lot of these blows while counter-escalating in their own ways, you know, more in terms of kind of expanding their nuclear program, but not hitting Israel directly, certainly, and not really going after Israeli kind of interests or kind of various military or political personnel elsewhere in the world. But, you know, but this attack really marked a turning point. And we saw in the aftermath of, you know, Israel bombing the Iranian consulate in Damascus that there was this debate in Iran that has existed all of these years between one school of thought that says, you know, oh, Israel is trying to provoke Iran, Netanyahu would benefit from a war, Iran shouldn't take the bait and should continue with this strategic patience policy and not fall into this trap of war. And another, the more dominant school of thought, which ultimately won out, that is that, you know, Israel is kind of is acting with impunity and that, you know, because Iran hasn't responded, that Israel has reached the conclusion that, you know, Iran is like weak and vulnerable and it will continue escalate. You know, it assassinated scientists, you know, generals, and now diplomatic compounds. Like, so they were saying that, you know, Israel's not deterred. So that was the context within Iran. Then, you know, concluding that the top decision makers there and the supreme leader there, that they were going to retaliate directly against Israel for this strike on their compound. And, you know, that led to the April 14th kind of unprecedented Iranian drone and missile attack directly against Israel.
So there's a couple of things that stand out to me about the April 1st attack. The one is the explanation that gets offered to elide the international law implications of bombing a consular building, which is, well, it didn't have consular protection. It didn't have the protection of a diplomatic facility because these military people were there and they were meeting with, you know, I guess, militia leaders or, you know, leaders of partner Iranian partner groups from Syria. And somehow this strips the structure of its protections. As you say, embassies, consulates have all kinds of personnel working there. There's military personnel. There's spying that goes on out of, you know, embassies almost as a matter of routine. You have intelligence officers working in these facilities. It seems to me that the justification that's been used here could apply to any diplomatic facility pretty much anywhere in the world on any given day, that there's a military personnel, you know, it's military personnel there. Ergo, this is not considered protected as a diplomatic facility. How did that kind of resonate with you, that defense?
I don't think, you know, it hasn't held water for anybody outside of Israel, it seems like. We saw that the international response to Israel kind of pushing back on this argument that it couldn't, that, you know, it was a diplomatic facility or that, you know, these military personnel were there. So, you know, it was justified in bombing it. That we saw.